Morning to you.
Good morning.
I apologize if I...
Yagodinsky.
Yagodinsky, thank you very much.
And she's now married, so now known as Erlandson, which makes it a little easier. May it please the court, counsel. The bottom line issue in this case is whether this court wants to allow trial courts to set out a new set of rules for expert testimony. The black letter law in this state establishes the rules applicable to all expert testimony. The rules are uniform and equally applied across the board to a wide spectrum of experts in every field and endeavor. It's as simple as the butcher, the baker, and candlestick maker. The rules apply consistently and there's no carve-outs. The black letter rules for expert qualifications I have put into four categories. The first is the Nebraska Rule of Evidence 702. And it's based on the training, education, experience, qualifications of an expert, which are well set out in the record and established and applicable here.
Counsel, there's been a lot of discussion in the briefs about the Schaffersman framework. Is this a Schaffersman case at all?
It can be. I think there's an interplay between Schaffersman and Rule 702, and it's explicitly discussed in every case. And that is my second category, so I appreciate the court getting there rapidly.
Isn't this a qualifications?
Qualifications is, though, the essential primary determination to be made before you get to the other methodology and reliability test under Daubert-Schaffersman procedures.
Which you may or may not get to, but experts are customarily qualified.
That's exactly correct.
In the pre-Daubert world.
Exactly. Court has to determine first whether they're qualified, and then the function is to decide if it's junk science or the methodology is properly applied or going through the rigid tests that are there. But really, Daubert-Schaffersman has been discussed as more liberal to allow testimony, whether it's been fully accepted or not in the community. But there is a difference between the 702 test on qualifications and Schaffersman, and it's tested against how they apply it in their practice or their ordinary course of business, and whether they follow the proper methodologies. I think 702 is much broader. But the court's correct. Focus in this case, and the only issue, when you have a Daubert issue, the court and the law is clear that you have to establish the exact parameters of what the Daubert challenge are. And then they're all consolidated into one hearing. And you waive all the other ones if you don't assert it. In this case, the only one that was asserted was qualifications. That was affirmed by the trial court on the record, and it was affirmed immediately before plaintiff made the offer of proof that this appeal and the case and the issues established, ruled upon by the court, were based on qualifications.
The orders that you're attacking came in two instances. You have an order after the original motions in limine, and then you have a motion to reconsider that generates another order. Because of that, the two orders that are involved, not just a single order, how does that affect our standard of review, if at all?
Well, both of those orders are for naught unless they're preserved at trial. So plaintiff reasserted and preserved those issues, and it was well defined on the trial court record. So they essentially, the only one that survived was the qualifications. And I've cited in my brief the exact record where that's made clear.
In your brief, you do not really talk, in the background you do, but in the argument you're not talking about learned treatises at all, right?
Again, the assigned error here is the qualifications. The court ruled that Dr. McLaren wasn't even qualified to testify to learned treatises. So the court didn't misapply the learned treatise doctrine. There is an error in that. The assigned error is that he abused his discretion in not allowing him to do two things. One, Dr. McLaren and the other doctors whose affidavits are in the record made it clear that medical literature in neurology, orthopedics, and other subjects are what are mandated to be taught in chiropractic school, and in the statute mandates it. We'll get to that. And that he uses medical texts and literature every day in his practice, yet the court says he can't utilize those as a foundation for his testimony. The second problem with that, and I think it's equally legally impermissible, is, besides not being able to testify to the very medical textbooks which his qualifications, training, experience is based upon. The second one is, he only allowed Dr. McLaren to testify to chiropractic literature, not medical literature. The ruling itself says only he can't testify to medical and other neuroscientists, not defining that. But the problem there is that there's in the record, we have several chiropractic articles authored by chiropractors that are peer-reviewed that discuss vestibular and concussion injuries and traumatic brain injury. There's a wealth of well-documented, peer-reviewed, chiropractic-authored information. So even if the court was correct that he couldn't talk about medical, he's now said, well, you can only talk about chiropractic, but you can't talk about any chiropractic peer-reviewed literature that is based on the relevant issues in this case, which are concussive injuries. So
on your motion for reconsideration, there were two exhibits, exhibits 53 and 54, that the trial court reserved ruling on, took under advisement. And I cannot find in the record anywhere that they were ever ruled on. Let's assume that that's the status. What's the effect of that?
Are those affidavits or?
They're a pair of affidavits.
Yeah. My understanding, they were ruled upon, but if they weren't, they were offered in our offer of proof in the record, so that they're well preserved for the appeal here. So whether he ruled on them or not, that's he ruled against us, and those are our evidence to controvert that, and so we offered them again and preserved that on the record as best we possibly could.
But not by reference to number, correct?
I think the numbers are exact.
In your offer of proof?
In our offer of proof, we named them specifically, and we put the numbers in specifically. There was no tenuousness or any lack of specificity there.
Your offer of proof is at pages 244 to 249 of the Bill of Exceptions. That's, you only made one offer of proof.
Yes. There.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, I'm moving to, I'm going to, the other broad areas, and I'll get to that, and I'll reserve the rest for rebuttal, is the case law in this state. And the case law that I'm specifically referring is that you don't have to be the exact specialization. And courts can't decide, an orthopedic can't testify about neurology and the recent case of the Court of Appeals, Gonzalez versus Nebraska Pediatric Practice, makes that exquisitely clear. There's a tremendous discussion there. And the last one is the court entirely ignored, and so did the defendant on their brief, the rules of statutory and regulatory construction. We offered the chiropractic scope of practice statute and the regulations, and it was made clear that those can only be given their plain and ordinary meaning.
That was on the motion for reconsideration.
It was on the motion for reconsideration, and again, assigned as error and argued in our brief.
Is the logic that by reading 38805, the scope of chiropractic and so forth, that it would necessarily include chiropractic neurology?
Absolutely. Well, it specifies that chiropractic schools to be certified must teach neurology inter alia, so.
So that's the language to which you.
Right, and the regulations require chiropractors, not chiropractic neurologists, just chiropractors in general, to have continuing education in neurology, neurological examination. I mean, it lays it out completely, and to ignore the plain and ordinary meaning of that and turn it on its head and said they can't practice in the areas that they're specifically statutorily authorized to do so, you know, flies in the face of clear law.
Counsel, before you sit down, was the chiropractor here testifying as a treating medical provider or something else?
He was a treating one, and there's testimony that his treatment was very efficacious.
So what evidence in our record was there of how he treated a brain injury as a chiropractor?
The only evidence would come, well, it was excluded at trial, so the evidence came through our offer proof.
I understand you wanted to offer an opinion about it. I'm asking about treatment evidence.
All right, I'm going to tell you that. It was in his, he had two affidavits. It contained his entire medical treatment record. His deposition was taken. That was offered. And he explained in full what his treatment methodology and course was, how she was referred to him and what he did.
As a fact witness.
Yeah, as a treating physician. But all that was excluded, but it is well documented and thorough. And then the other evidence would be Gina Yaganesi testified that he treated her, but she didn't say anything. She said that her headaches were so much better after Dr. McLaren's treatment, but we didn't want to, you know, go beyond the bounds of our motion in limine, so we didn't go beyond that. I apologize that I use all my rebuttal time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wackel, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. The sole issue in this appeal is whether Dr. McLaren, a chiropractor without a medical degree, is qualified to give an opinion that the plaintiff, in this case, appellant, suffered a brain injury at the time of the accident. We talked about 27-702 in the preceding argument. That statute states that expert testimony is only admissible if the witness qualifies as an expert. This court has had two cases where it spoke about chiropractors and their qualifications, one being Floyd versus Warbeck. In that case, the Nebraska Supreme Court said that chiropractors are only experts within their field of chiropractics. Similarly, in Rogers versus Sparks, which actually was an earlier case, this court went a step further and said that chiropractors and the chiropractic practice is not the medical practice. Therefore, chiropractors cannot practice medicine.
Does 38805-1 inform what chiropractors do or ought to be familiar with?
I think those statutes need to be read in the context in which they're written. If you look at the 38801 at SEC, the sections after that, and the Nebraska Administrative Code governing chiropractors, you will see that 29-006 allows a chiropractor to receive continuing education in neurological procedures, but only as it relates to the chiropractic practice. You asked about 38805. 38805 defines the chiropractic practice. And in nowhere in that statute does it talk about neurology. Now, while subsection B refers to identifying and removing interferences in nerve energy, it continues by stating that is only allowed, that a chiropractor may only do this when it's done in the context of giving a chiropractic adjustment. That's not what occurred in this case. Bottom line, judges, diagnosing a brain injury is medical. It's a medical determination, and it involves the practice of medicine. In addition to the cases that we cited to you in our brief, I wanted to bring to your attention the case of D versus PCS Property Management, Inc. It's 174 California Appeals 4th. 390, 2009. In that case, the Court of Appeals...
What was the page number on that?
The, It was 174, Cal Appeals 4th, 390, and I'm referring to Section 397 within that. Okay? In that case, the California Court of Appeals affirmed the trial court's exclusion of a neuropsychologist with the last name of Gutierrez because he didn't have a medical degree, but nevertheless intended to testify that the plaintiff in that case suffered a brain injury. In finding that the trial court did not exclude it or abuse its discretion in excluding this testimony, the Court of Appeals cited, reviewed the record of the trial court, and even quoted a portion of the trial court's finding, which I'm going to read to you. The court, that being the trial court, further explained Gutierrez can also testify as to her personality and his observations thereof, to her behavior, to her feelings and emotions and her relationships, but he cannot attribute it to medical or organic causes. He may not label them brain damage or brain injury. That is a medical decision.
That was a psychologist?
A neuropsychologist.
Neuropsychologist.
Yes, who did not have a medical degree.
Counsel, I asked your opponent if it makes any difference to our standard of review whether that this occurred in two installments, if you will, on motions in limine and then on a motion for reconsideration. Does that make any difference?
I believe the issue of whether Dr. McLaren is qualified to testify has been preserved for appeal. I believe the motion to reconsider was timely. I believe the issue was non-final until trial, preserved by way of offer of proof and timely appeal. However, with your regard to your question about Exhibits 53 and 54, if those are not received, they're not in evidence. And it would be the plaintiff's job, since those were plaintiff's exhibits, to make sure that they were received.
Okay. On the, you had, at least as so far as I can find it in the record, three motions in limine that addressed Dr. McLaren, two that were filed in March and one that was filed in June.
I believe that, I believe that was accurate. I believe all the motions in limine in part address McLaren, but we're not, each of them were not all solely based on Dr. McLaren.
Do any of them use the word qualifications?
They use the word Daubert. And they also cite to the opinions that he gave as an attachment to the motion. And within the Daubert ruling, and being that a witness must be qualified as part of that examination, otherwise the remaining Daubert analysis is unnecessary, we believe that that was included and put the appellants on notice of our challenge.
Thank you.
With regard to Dr. McLaren's characterization as he being a chiropractic physician and a chiropractic neurologist, I'd like to note to the court that in the Nebraska Administrative Code governing chiropractors, chiropractors and chiropractic physicians are used interchangeably. They're one and the same. Therefore, a chiropractic physician is nothing more than a chiropractor. Now, while we agree that a medical neurologist would be qualified to diagnose a brain injury, a chiropractic neurologist is not a medical neurologist. And the only medical neurologist in the record on appeal who has provided an opinion on this case is Dr. Joel Cotton. Dr. Joel Cotton, I think it can be found on page 11 of his deposition, which is Exhibit 56, states that the plaintiff did not sustain a concussion at the time of the accident because at no time was she unconscious.
But presence of a competing expert doesn't speak to the qualifications of the plaintiff's expert, does it?
It does not.
So,
but I will say that in his deposition, he does review, Dr. Cotton reviews the analysis undertaken by Dr. McLaren and states in several parts that he has, he feels or believes that the analysis methodologies and qualifications of Dr. McLaren are insufficient to provide this opinion, that plaintiff suffered a brain injury at the time of the accident.
Dr. Cotton thinks Dr. McLaren's not an expert.
Unqualified to provide an opinion on the sustenance of a brain injury. I think the record on appeal shows that Dr. McLaren is an expert in various areas within the scope of chiropractic practice. What we're trying to distinguish is that diagnosing a brain injury is a medical matter, not a chiropractic matter.
Do you agree with opposing counsel's representation that the chiropractor here was treating the plaintiff for a brain injury?
First, the treatments began over 5 years after the accident. I think that's an important fact that the court should take in mind. His deposition shows the various tests that were done on the appellant, which do relate to, at least according to Dr. McLaren, they relate to the issue of whether she suffered a concussion. Again, Dr. Joel Cotton would say that these tests have no basis in the medical field and are not used.
And when did Dr. Cotton examine the patient?
Dr. Cotton, I believe, simply reviewed records. With regard to the articles and the use of the articles at trial, I think it's been conceded and admitted that that issue has not been preserved for appeal. But even if this court took on some type of plain error analysis, we would like to note that the law is that an authority under the learned treatise exception to the rule against hearsay can be used and introduced by an expert in the same field as the author of that authority. And in this case,
even if the learned treatises are out and they haven't been preserved in this appeal, if we were to find that the chiropractic neurologist is qualified, are you making some sort of harmless error analysis that it would not require a remand for retrial?
No, I'm simply stating that regardless of this court's decision on the issue of qualifications, that and if they found that if this court found that Dr. McLaren was qualified, he would still be unable to introduce articles written by authors outside of his profession who have medical degrees when he does not have one. That's all I'm saying. With regard to the propriety of the trial court's analysis on finding that Dr. McLaren was unqualified and stopping its analysis there as opposed to going through the remaining Daubert factors, we've cited case law in our brief that states qualifications is the initial inquiry, and if a court finds that a witness is unqualified as an expert in a particular area, the remaining Daubert factors are unnecessary to analyze. So, Justices, we ask that you affirm the court's order and find that the trial court did not abuse its discretion when it found that Dr. McLaren was unqualified to provide expert testimony that the plaintiff suffered a brain injury at the time of the accident. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. The next case of the day is State versus Cruz.